but that's the old me. Shouting out of my window, drove down, 'cause I don't care anymore, said I don't care.
Let's go. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, having a great Memorial Day weekend. Whether you're listening live on Saturday afternoon on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or you are listening to the podcast version of the show, which you can do anytime, any place, anywhere, anyhow, anywho. It's always available for you on demand, anywhere you get your podcasts. Anyway, no matter how you're listening to us, we're glad you're listening, and we hope to make your day a little bit better by bringing you up to date with everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does every week on the show, please welcome my co-host, Jeremy Branch.
Hey, buddy. Real quick, I can't imagine you're a huge fan of Dave Matthews Band, but I'm real excited. I'm going to the Wharf to see them on Monday.
Okay.
Do you like them?
I think they got a few songs that I don't mind.
They're one of those bands, interestingly enough, in the 1990s when they came out, I was very much into the alt scene, and their first couple singles didn't grab me to the point that I kind of made fun of them, like Hootie and the Blowfish or something like that. It was years later that I met a friend at college, and he like opened up their discography to me, and I think Carter Beaufort is just one of the greatest drummers out there. But they're a good vibe, so I enjoy them. I think the Wharf will be a good venue for them, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think there's no question there's some excellent players in the band. From a just sheer raw musical talent standpoint, I can't really argue with that.
Not what it's all about, though, is it?
Yeah, no, I'm not necessarily a big fan of their tunes overall, and I'm not necessarily a big fan of the whole. Like, and they're like on the lighter end of the jam band spectrum, I'd say. It's not like it's Fish or something, but
yeah.
But
that's funny you say that.
I'm just not a big jam guy in general.
Yeah.
Like, there's been a couple of bands that I've liked that have been kind of like drafted into that somehow. Like, I'm thinking of Primus here. Like, I don't really think of Primus as a jam band, but yet like the jam band world has kind of glommed onto them.
Interesting. I did not know that.
And you know what you were saying about like them being on the alt radio in the 90s, it's really interesting in general. Like I know I'm going way off on a tangent here, but alternative has always kind of been a very big umbrella.
Yeah, it's like a catch-all for a lot of stuff, right?
It is. It's kind of like this is not the mainstream rock music of the moment. And that has shifted over the years to where there are certain things that have come into that category or have been placed under that umbrella that had they come out 10, 20 years earlier would have been considered mainstream. I'm thinking of like a great example, like The Cult.
Yes.
Like that, like The Cult's like late 80s, early 90s music. It's very straightforward 70s AC/DC kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yet they were considered alternative rock. To put it in a little bit more modern terms, a band like the Struts. Very like Queen influenced, straight ahead rock that again, like late 70s, early 80s would have just been considered mainstream rock and roll. It was something that was considered in the alternative world now. And the flip of that, there's a lot of stuff that's like very much now thought of as like, oh, you know, that was a big pop hit in the 80s that was not at all a pop hit. It was considered very left of center and very weird if you were listening to that stuff. And I'm thinking of The Cure and Depeche Mode and New Order and The Smiths and stuff you hear like in the grocery store now. And it's like, that did not get played on commercial radio in the United States in the 80s. And I know because I was a kid and I was listening to commercial radio, and some of that stuff I didn't discover until I was in high school and getting beyond that and getting into MTV and getting into just discovering stuff on my own. And, you know, I was very much and I think my tastes still kind of run in that direction. I was very much like what we would now consider an alt kid. And, you know, that was like my favorite stuff. And like, I was looked at weirdly for listening to that. And I was, you know, people looked down their noses at me. And then like the end of the decade, some of that stuff started breaking through. And I was like, oh, have you heard this new band, Love and Rockets? Yeah, I heard of them three albums ago.
Yeah, and right.
I heard of them before that when they were with Peter Murphy in a band called Bauhaus. I mean, so, you know, it's perspective is a weird thing in that regard. It's kind of weird to think about, like, if you're talking about like early Dave Matthews Band, you're talking about like 96. 95, 96.
That was like top 40 radio. Like, they were never playing that stuff on TK, right?
Yeah, but they were definitely, but it was definitely still considered like alternative. Like, if you listen to like an alternative radio station, you would hear What Would You Say or Ants Marching or Crash, you know, songs like that. Alongside like, you know, you're a little early for like the new metal era, but. You know, that it's kind of that weird in between time between, well, I mean, like early Green Day, not early, I say early, we're still talking third album. Dookie was Green Day's third album, you know, but alongside that, like pop punk movement and alongside, you know, kind of the remnants of grunge, you still had Pearl Jam in there and Soundgarden and Stone Temple Pilots. And, you know, it's, that stuff doesn't sound anything alike.
And what's interesting is like, it's post kind of the Lilith Fair era of music. Like Lisa Loeb and the Nine Stories was considered alternative music. But I think we're kind of talking more about, or I'm talking more about kind of like that college rock versus alternative, right?
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Like what you might think of as indie. But like even that, like, I mean, it's always that thing of when does it become not an alternative anymore? When does it become not indie anymore? And there are bands that have never like changed their style. Great example, to again, put it in current terms, look at a band like Tame Impala.
Tame Impala, a huge producer of like some of the biggest top 40 acts, but they were like an indie rock band.
And they still sound the same, but like Dracula is everywhere. And it's a mainstream top 40 hit. And so, you know, it becomes this thing. Like, I remember, as again going back, but like, I remember U2 winning Best Alternative Album, like after they broke at the Grammys, you know, like this is after Joshua Tree. I think after Octoon Baby, it was somewhere in like the pop era. They won Best Alternative Album 1 year. And like they got up to accept, and Bono said something along the lines of, you know, I know we're like the biggest band in the world, and it seems weird that we're winning an alternative award, but you know, we've always kind of made it our place to F up the mainstream. He didn't say F.
I think they very much have that reputation. However, they did put that song on the iPhone, which was like a crazy, very corporate move.
They're never going to live that down.
No.
All they were doing was trying to do something nice and give people a free album, and people just absolutely despise them for it. It's
weird.
It's one of the stupidest things to hate people for. If you hate a band for, if you don't like the album, don't listen to it. Don't, you know, delete it. It's fine. Oh, you gave me something free. How dare you?
It was a weird thing to be mad about. That was a strange time.
Yeah, I mean, I actually still have it, you know, because I had an Apple product, and it's still in my Apple Music account. I don't use that often, but every once in a while, if I'm in there, some song off that album will come up, and I don't get mad about it. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's that U2 album.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, maybe it's because they didn't give them the Joshua Tree. Like if they'd given everybody the Joshua Tree, then maybe they wouldn't be so mad about it. But you know,
yeah,
I don't know. People are always going to find something to be mad about. And you know, we'll probably end up talking some more about what things people get mad about when we come back from the break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
I get knocked down.
Blues Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with me. And I can't think of anything more fitting than a massive pop hit from an anarchist collective.
Right. Thematically, it's kind of on point.
Yeah. So for that to be like a song that was used in a television series that pretty much epitomizes an anarchist mentality with a random, like, massive pop success, I think that is The Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going to talk about probably for the majority of the show today, if not the entire rest of the show. We'll see how things go. We have something else in our back pocket, but we haven't talked about this final season of the series at all. So I want to talk a little about the overall of the season, and then the meat of it is the finale, which just aired this week. Not just the season finale, but the series finale.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went into this season knowing that this was the end. Not necessarily knowing, as we eventually found out, that we're not going to get more Gen V, which is the spinoff series, which had been kind of interwoven with The Boys. I'm a little disappointed about that, especially because it seems like that decision might have been made with not enough time to give those characters a proper farewell. And like, if there's one criticism I have of this season, it's the fact that, I mean, there may be more than one criticism I have, but it's the fact that those characters kind of got the short shrift. But I get that because it wasn't their show. And I think that they thought at least halfway through the season that they were going to, maybe more than that, because they didn't announce this cancellation that Gen V wasn't coming back until a couple of weeks ago. And it's well known that this entire season was written before the 2016 election. Or 2024 election.
The 2020. Yeah, yeah. That is so surreal to me. As we get into this, that's something that I think is a big standout, is that there are so many scenes, lines of dialogue, moments in this finale that if they wrote it the week leading up to the release of it, like South Park does, that would have tracked as well. So talk about being prescient.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. This is a dark satirical show that is commenting on superheroes and the media landscape in one regard, but it's also commenting on current, mainly American politics. And it has always been viewed through this lens of being satirical. But this year, there is so much stuff that is in the show that it feels like South Park. It feels like they wrote it the week that the show came out, which you cannot do in a live action show with a lot of special effects.
No.
It's not like, you know, something where, like South Park, where they use a very fast animation system that they've got built up. I think I don't know if they still do it, but I think they used to do it in Flash.
Yeah, they probably still do. I'm not sure though.
Yeah, but you know, it's something that can be generated and animated very fast, so that they have that capability of writing a show the same week that it's going to air. This is not that case. This stuff was written more than about 2 years ago, before the election. And yet they've had stuff that when they wrote it, they thought, oh, this is going to be seen as completely outlandish, and yet lands at the same time that it's completely mirroring the real world that we're in. And
does that have a positive or negative effect on the satire, like as far as succeeding as satire?
I think that it could be a double edge. In fairness, I think that it kind of depends on how you view the satire to begin with. If you are of the mind that agrees with the politics that they're espousing, I think it just magnifies and builds. And I think if you are very against that political viewpoint, it either makes you groan or you, as appears to be the case, completely miss the point.
Yeah, I think that hyperbole is something that, like, satire, I think, is most effective when it can be absurdist, but also still touch on these things. Point to a movie like Idiocracy or something, which, I mean, foretold, right? But at the time that it came out, I really, really liked it because while it was both kind of out of our reach, you could definitely see things trending in that direction where right now The Boys is almost holding a mirror up to current society as it is right now. And maybe that's okay. I just feel like it kind of takes away the fun of it a little bit.
You think it makes it feel too on the nose?
Yes. And not even about whether I agree or disagree, because, you know, I agree with a lot of it. But yeah, it does feel a little on the nose.
Well, it's interesting, though, because you do get people who, it seems, completely miss the point and have been, you know, fans of the show, fans of characters on the show that are built up as characters that you're not supposed to like or root for.
I hear this a lot, but I don't know any, I mean, maybe I wouldn't, but I don't know too many, maybe Homelander fans I can think of, but not people that thought that Homelander was the good guy. I know that that's something that people talk about, but I don't think that is a substantial amount of the audience.
But do you think that's just people that aren't in your bubble?
I think that there was a both sides argument to be made at the beginning, where that kind of went away. And I do even think that the showrunner mentioned that there seemed to be a little bit of confusion and kind of leaned in, so that they made their point very clear. And that's fine. I don't really have issue with that inherently, but I do like when there is a little bit more punching at the absurdity of everything, because let's not pretend like liberalism is without its critiques, you know?
Well, and I think it has the, without getting too in depth on the politics, but over the course of the series, it has poked fun at liberalism as well. But I think at this point,
especially in the earlier seasons.
Yeah. And I think at this point in the world, again, not saying for good or for bad, but like as a perfect example, there was a story going around this week about how SNL has just really given it to the right this year, and that like 80% of their satire has been towards the right, and they've very, very rarely skewed the left this year. But who's in power?
Yeah, that is very fair.
I mean, satire speaks truth to power. And when all the power is on one side, why would you, what is there to satirize on the other side?
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole other show that we could do on some other platform. But yeah, I agree with that. I think that's a really good point. If you're not critiquing the institutions, then it loses a little bit of its potency anyways.
Yeah. Now, that being said, like, I do think that there's still something to the other side's not always right. And when we get into talking about the end of this show, I mean, since we're not getting into the finale yet, I want to maybe steer away from what I'm thinking here, but
that's not the season leading up when you want,
that's not the ultimate ending point of the show.
Right.
If that makes sense. And if not, yeah, it will make sense. We'll probably do it in the next segment, to be fair, because we're running fairly close to the end of this segment. I like the season overall. I know there has been some criticism about it being a little bit all over the place and maybe not doing enough to service certain characters, in particular Gen V, but some other characters as well. Did you have like an overarching feel about the season as a whole?
I've touched on a little bit of it, and that is the fact that it has trended so far into current politics. However, for the most part, I've really enjoyed it. It's consistently been The Boys, and if you love The Boys, you're probably like this, but the issue is the journey is always more fun than the destination, and as a culture, we love to pick apart final seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, I think this is very much a victim of that. I can't think of too many TV shows where the whole culture didn't get hyper-focused on every single little shortcoming of a show in the final season when they kind of are more generous about similar problems throughout the rest of it.
Yeah, and especially not just the final season, but especially getting into the final episode. I mean, we saw it earlier this year with Stranger Things, which, mm-hmm. you know, that finale has now been just vilified, which again seems ridiculous to me because I felt like it was a pretty great finale.
Yeah, the last 15 minutes of both of these finales were pretty great, but I do think a lot of stuff was left on the table in both of them.
But it's interesting to think about that because Stranger Things is more of a, while the Duffer Brothers have said they may do some more things in that universe. And in fact, they did just drop the animated series that kind of takes place in the midst of this series this week, which I haven't watched yet. They have said that this is it for these characters and for this portion of that world. They don't intend to go back to Hawkins. Mm-hmm. Versus The Boys, we know we're going to get more in that universe. We know if nothing else, there's the prequel series Vought Rising that's getting ready to come out. There's a Boys Mexico spinoff that's in the works out there. So there's a reason for leaving this a little more open-ended, I think.
And I think there's valid contention for why people felt like it was more of a setup for the spinoff than a fulfilling conclusion to this series that we've spent so long with.
Well, let's talk about that more when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with us. And Jeremy, you know, Posh Spice was absolutely the worst of the crew.
I think we know what she brought to the Spice Girls.
You know, sure, but I was always a ginger man myself.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Okay, I can see that.
I absolutely, unironically, just do really like that song.
Oh, no. I was going to say, I didn't enjoy that at all.
Oh, no. I forgot, you know, it's a fun song. Like, it just is. Like, I'm not like a Spice Girls stan or anything, but like that song, like, I actually very clearly remember the first time I heard that song. Still lived in Tampa. They played it on the radio and on the morning show and were like making a big deal about it. Like this song is not, and it wasn't, I think they were one of the first stations in the US to play it. It's like, this is like the biggest thing in the UK right now. Nobody's heard it in the States. We're going to play it. And that came out of the radio and dug it. I still do. It is what it is. But I bring it up because it was brought up in the course of, one of the episodes this season, towards the end of this season of The Boys, which is what we're talking about here. And of all things, it comes up in a Billy Butcher rallying the team speech where he's talking about how everybody has their thing to bring to the group. And even if they don't have the best thing to bring to the group, they can still be. And he's using Posh Spice as the example here. She didn't even get a solo on Wannabe. She could barely sing. She could barely dance. But look at her now. She's, you know, the head of this fashion line. She's still married to David Beckham. You know, yada, yada, yada. You know, that even the smallest cog is important, basically. And it's an interesting message. And it's not, it comes from this guy who you don't expect to be leaning on the Spice Girls, although not the first time he's done that in the course of the series, I should point out. And it's, you know, it's because his late wife was a fan. So, I really liked that moment in this season.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Huey is the posh spice of the group, because while he's not a soup and while he's not, you know, well-trained in the same way that maybe Mother's Milk or Frenchie was, he's definitely got a lot of heart. And that's something that we see play out in the finale specifically.
Well, that's an interesting thought. Like, I hadn't really thought about it in that sense of, like, if you're going to look at this team, this ragtag team of who the proverbial weak point is. I think the ending of the series, and again, I don't want to get too much into this, but I think the ending of the series puts the lie to that. I don't think
he. He also has his tech skills, which is a very specialized thing that he shows too.
Yeah, I don't think Huey's the weak point at all, and I'm not certain that there is one amongst the core team.
Well, I mean, Butcher's a freaking maniac, but he's definitely not weak in a physical way. Without him, he would have never put a stop to everything that was happening.
So if we're going to put, because I think we have originally, if I'm remembering correctly, originally there are five members of the boys. You've got Butcher, you've got MM, you've got Frenchie, you've got Huey, and you've got Kimiko.
Uh-huh.
So five boys, the boy, you know, Kimiko's not a boy, but you know what I mean. And five Spice Girls. So thought exercise, line them up one by one.
Ooh, very interesting. Okay. I mean, Butcher would have to be Ginger, right?
You think?
Or is Butcher scary Spice?
I think Butcher's scary.
Maybe Kimiko is scary Spice, though, too.
I think, well, maybe, but, like, I think Butcher is, I mean, the first voice you hear in Wannabe is scary Spice.
All right, so we'll call Butcher scary Spice. Now we got to go on to Baby Spice. Who's Baby Spice?
I mean, that's got to be Huey, doesn't it?
I was kind of in the camp that Huey would be Sporty Spice, or excuse me, what's her name?
Posh?
Victoria Beckham.
Yeah, but like, I don't think so. Like, I think Frenchie is Posh Spice.
Okay.
Like,
so we're
not doing the Power Rangers thing
in making Mother's Milk scary Spice, I guess.
No. I think Mother's Milk is probably Sporty Spice.
All right, then who do we got left?
Well, I think that makes I think if Huey is Baby, then Kimiko is Ginger.
I think your lineup stinks, but we'll move on.
Well, no, I mean, then give me yours. Like,
I'm not comfortable.
I think Ginger,
a whole segment talking about which Spice Girl is which of the
if,
boys.
If I think Ginger is kind of like the muscle and the backbone.
She's the lead vocalist though, right?
No, I mean, none of them are technically the lead vocalist. It's a band. It's a group. They're all vocalists.
But you have a lead, a tenor, a baritone, an alto, and a soprano.
Nah, I think it's more like the boy band thing. It really is. It's like, I mean,
the,
like,
the boy bands have that.
Sort of.
The boy bands have that. Nick Lachey was the lead guy of that band, and
I think it just depends on the group.
Justin Timberlake's the lead of NSYNC.
I think it depends on the group. I think the Spice Girls, kind of like the B-52s, really rely more on, like, what I like to call gang vocals, where like the lead vocal switches off.
You're right. And especially in Wannabe, like, they're not doing a bunch of harmonizing in a conventional way. It's kind of just hopping back and forth in the same register.
Yeah. They all, other than Posh, they all take turns on the lead. So, and
poor
I think
Posh Spice, man.
And I think that you could say the same thing about the boys. Like,
yeah, sure.
I would say the only one of the boys who is never in a leadership position is probably Frenchie.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair observation. We did have a little detour into a love story in season 4 that didn't quite earn him the stripes as being the lead of the actual team, but it was a way to give him some storyline where he was the center. But outside of that, you're right.
That's when two become one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It just occurred to me and I couldn't resist it. Like I could probably name 3 Spice Girls songs, to be honest. And it's like those two. And if I can come up with a way to work and spice up your life, I'll do it. But
oh yeah, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, that's about the limit of my Spice Girls knowledge, other than just, you know, generally knowing who they are and what their personas are and that kind of thing. I also think, you know, like I never thought we were going off on this tangent, but
this is the most insane segment that I think we've ever done.
The more I think about it, the more it fits. And if you think about where things are at the ending of this, to some extent, maybe doesn't quite line up for Butcher, but for some of the other characters, like the one that has had the least spotlight since the Spice Girls ended is probably Sporty. And if I'm going to compare Sporty to Mother's Milk and think about where these characters are at the end of this series, doesn't that kind of fit?
I mean, he ends up being the one with the happily ever after at the end, and I feel like, they all kind of do, which is nice.
Just kind of disappears into the woodwork.
With his wife and family.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, again, if you're going to... And let's save the finale stuff for the final segment. I don't want to spoil too much, but like, I don't know. This is not where I expected this conversation to go at all, which is one of the things I love about talking to you, Jeremy. At no point in thinking about talking about the boys did I think it was going to be an advanced analysis of the boys as the Spice Girls, but
It's in the unique angle. Nobody has probably done this yet.
I have not seen anybody have this discussion online. I've consumed a fair amount of online discourse about the final season and the finale in particular. It's not an angle I've seen anybody take. And it's not one I ever thought I'd be taking, but like the more I started thinking about it, I was like, it's not really a throwaway scene. It's kind of a key scene.
It is.
But that, I think that they were saying more in that scene than was immediately obvious.
It's the rally the troops scene that you need at that, when everybody's at their low point after the death of the character and they've got to get everybody's morale up enough to go and finish the job. So it's kind of that coach speech at the end of Remember the Titans or something.
Sure. And when you think about like this series has always made good use of music and made good use of the idea of music, like Billy Joel being such a central thing to this show. I think that there was more to this, more thought to that scene than we might have thought there was when we initially watched it. I honestly didn't think about it until we just started talking about it right now. But we've got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
I wore a younger man's clothes. song tonight. Well, we're all in the mood for a melody, and you got us feeling all right.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line. And Jeremy, I got to just real quick, I'm rethinking about the Spice Girls boys dichotomy. And I can make a good argument for reversing Huey and Kimiko and calling Huey Ginger and Kimiko Baby. But that's neither here nor there. I wanted to get into talking about the finale and, of course, you know, coming back with Billy Joel. Billy Joel has been such a key element of this series over the course of the series. Huey's favorite musical artist, been many Billy Joel songs used along the course of the series. And that one kind of played as kind of the denouement of the series.
Yeah, you know,
it is the kind of montage leading up to the end of the episode after kind of all of the action has ended. And I should point out, like, this is where I want to talk about some of the points I think people have missed about the boys along the way.
If I may real quick.
Yeah.
I think the boys has been a show that never really toyed with just straight up earnestness. And the fact that I got the feelings that I did at the end of the show, I think is worthy of wiping the slate of some of the critiques that I do have, but I'm interested to kind of dive into some of the discourse because I think we might have different perspectives on some of them, so hit me.
See, I'd quibble a little bit about the lack of straight-up earnestness. I think that it has been there, and I think that it has been there in the person of Huey and, to a lesser extent, Starlight or Annie.
I'm sorry. Sentimentality may be the better word.
Yeah, and I think that ultimately is the conflict at the core of the show. The conflict is not the battle between Homelander and Butcher, which I think is what a lot of people centered on. Both of them are bastards.
Yes.
They're bastards on, they're two sides of the same coin.
Absolutely.
And the real moral battle is between Butcher and Huey.
And even trying to maintain who you are versus letting your trauma turn you into the very thing that we're trying to not be, you know?
Yeah, I mean, along with the satire is there, and it's you know, there is commentary there. But the core conflict is not Homelander versus the boys. It's the boys versus the immorality of the world. And
there's also a bunch of really crass humor and over the top hyper violence throughout the series. Also,
well, it is based on a Garth Ennis comic.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's what makes it hard to, for me to lock on to a lot of the sentimentality because it's constantly undercut with stuff.
But anyways, let's
get on to the stuff.
That's who, like, and I recognize you're not a person that comes at it from the comics. But like, if you know the work of Garth Ennis, that is Garth Ennis. Garth Ennis has always had this over the top violence and insanity that's contrasting with absolute moments of heart and tenderness and sentimentality. Like,
well,
if you go back and look at, you know, a book like Preacher, which is amazing, and I at some point I need to go back and watch the entire series they made out of that because I didn't get past, I think, the first part of the first season just because it was on a service that it wasn't easy for me to get to, not because I wasn't enjoying it. And, you know, even his run on The Punisher, which we've seen some of that stuff adapted into various versions of the character. That's who Garth Ennis is. Like, they have remained true while they're going off in their own directions and doing their own things with this property. In the end, they remain true to the heart of what Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson brought to the page in the comics. And that was always the, you know, I've seen Eric Kripke say, we've always known that it came down to Butcher and Huey, which is where we end up. Like Homelander, yes, Homelander had to, and we'll put up the spoiler alert here, just in case you haven't watched the season finale of The Boys yet, series finale of The Boys. Yeah, Homelander had to die. You know, that was a must, but that was never the point. And that's why it happens halfway through the episode.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good decision. Now, something that you and I had talked about before we started recording is that there's been discussion about Homelander not being Homelander in the final season. And while I think as a characterization, he did kind of become less threatening in the same way that I've given him credit for a lot. And I know you have a counter to that, but for me, it is the first generation of the Gen V that was supposed to give him unchecked and untold amount of power and invulnerability. He didn't do or behave in a way that set it apart from anything that had come before that. And it was weird to see him going from being able to saw Kimiko in half with his laser eyes just a couple seasons or a couple episodes earlier to all of a sudden he's hitting them with the laser eyes and it's just knocking them back like a strong punch.
Well, the people that he was hitting with the laser eyes had invulnerability too. Like, it's not like he hit Huey with them.
No, but Kimiko literally got cut in half at that camp by him. I'm not asking you to defend it. I'm just saying there were some clear plot holes. Not plot holes, but power scaling issues.
I get what you're saying, but like, I think that I do kind of think that that's beside the point, but above and beyond that, it's a difference in how it happened too. Like, there's a difference between one short burst hitting one part of your body and like being lasered in half. And he didn't have the opportunity to do that.
I think if you establish the rules of the game, you have to play by them. And if you don't, it's fair to critique that.
It's absolutely fair to critique it, but that's not what I've heard people complaining about.
Well, tell me like, some of that. Like, I'm curious.
What I'm coming down to is the final episode more than throughout the course of the season. It was the Homelander being exposed as what he's always been. He was nothing but a power mad bully, and the minute the power was taken away, he's an empty suit. He's nothing. He's garbage. He knows it, and he's, you know, reduced to begging for his life and debasing himself.
Yeah, what was he supposed to do? I don't understand.
There were people that wanted him to be like when he had Soldier Boy at his knees, and Soldier Boy's just like, just do it. You know, just, you know. Wanted him to still stand up, wanted him to still have the attitude. And that was never the point. That is not who Homelander is. Homelander has always been.
I loved when Butcher took his power, when Kimiko took his power, and Butcher's like blood and bone, and he calls back to what Homelander had said to him in previous seasons. And it was just so cathartic to just watch Butcher beat the crap out of him, because Butcher was always that guy. He wasn't an empty suit. He was just a ball of rage.
Yeah.
Seeing him be able to work through him like that was so awesome.
But if you thought Homelander was out of character at the end, you missed the point of the entire series.
Yeah.
He was absolutely 100% in character. That was all he was. That's what bullies are. And that's, you know, yes, he is supposed to be analogous to someone in the real world. We won't get into who. And, you know, we remains to be seen what will happen with that person. So I thought that was great. And then I thought the ending with it coming down to Huey and Butcher, and Butcher still being on a mission to end everything, and Huey having to be the one to stop him. And I think this show implies that Butcher was at least willing to back off at the very end before.
I think he would have stopped, but how was Huey to know?
And would he have stopped for good?
Right.
Probably not.
That's actually a good point.
And
okay, hey, another critique real quick. I know we're getting ahead of where I'm at, but the conflict with the deep I thought was really good, and him ending up in the ocean
was
perfect. But after Sam Jackson appears as a hammerhead in the previous episodes, and then there's all of these sharks swarming the deep. It was a real missed opportunity not to have those sharks tear him to pieces and instead have him be impaled by an octopus tentacle.
Well, but you heard the Justice for Ambrosius.
Yeah. You know, I know. I get it.
I do wonder how they knew about Ambrosius.
Even after he got stabbed, he should have got eaten.
Yeah, I do wonder how they knew about Ambrosius.
That's fair, also. Yeah.
But you know, who knows? But yeah, no, I love that. I love the ending for these characters. I thought it was a great finale. I think it was a great series. I look forward to what else we might get in that universe. I don't think we're going to see these core characters again, or at least not in any large way. And that's fine. We've come to the end of their story.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've come to the end of our show. We will be back next week with more. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.